So what if you didn't have to get hit on the head to become a genius? What if you could take a pill or download some netware that would supercharge your brain? Hollywood loves that story, but so do a few real scientists. Theoretical physicist Michio Kaku has just written a book called The Future of the Mind. He told Steve Paulson we're in a golden age of brain science.
Think 10, 15 years ago when the brain was largely a black box. Now, however, using MRI scans, we can see down to about a tenth of a millimeter. We can actually see thoughts ricocheting like a ping pong ball inside the brain. And so we've learned more about the brain in the last 10 years than in all of human history combined.
Now, one of the hottest fields in neuroscience is the brain-machine interface. What's happening here?
Oh, there's been an absolute explosion of this. For example, Stephen Hawking, my colleague, the famous cosmologist, has lost complete control of his fingers, so we physicists put a chip in his right glass, an antenna that connects him to a laptop computer, allowing him to communicate with the outside world. And if you put a chip directly on top of the brain, you can now control a laptop computer, which controls a wheelchair, household appliances, allows you to write email, send email, do crossword puzzles, play video games, operate the light switch. Anything you can do with a computer, these people can do with the mind.
You'll have to explain this. So going back to the example of Stephen Hawking, so he has this this chip in the corner of his glasses. How does he actually use that to activate a computer?
Well, what happens is, commercially now, headbands are available. You don't have to put a chip in your glass, but headbands are available that pick up radio from the brain. The brain is a milliwatt transmitter. It's electrical. It emits slight amount of electromagnetic radiation, which can be picked up by these headbands and by these chips. Then they're connected to a computer. And historically, we never knew how to unravel this mass of data coming from these sensors, but now we can. We can create a dictionary between certain impulses picked up by the headband and certain motions of the cursor on a computer screen.
Well, speaking of kind of these science fiction-like technologies, you talk about the possibility of new technology that will record our memories.
Yes, this was once considered totally preposterous. I mean, how can you record a memory after all? It's so fleeting. But at Wake Forest University in North Carolina and also in Los Angeles, they did it. You take a mouse and you put electrodes on the hippocampus, which is the gateway to memory. By recording the messages, they can then replay these messages months later, and you remember tasks that you had forgotten. So they trained the mouse to sip water. They recorded the memory on the hippocampus, replayed the memory months later, and bingo, the mouse remembered on the first try.
How do you record a memory?
Well, you record a memory very simply by tape recording the impulses going from the left to the right part of the hippocampus. We have no way of decoding this. In other words, we're actually clueless as to how to decipher this tape recording, but you don't have to know. And next will come primate trials. For example, a monkey may eat a banana or something like that. And after that, the short-term goal is to create a brain pacemaker, such that you push a button and you immediately know where you live, who you are, for Alzheimer's patients. Think of it. There are going to be tens of millions of people around the world with Alzheimer's wandering our streets, not knowing where they live, who they are. They'll be able to push a button and retrieve many of these memories. And beyond that, perhaps even complex memories can be encoded, meaning that perhaps workers will be able to learn high-tech skills rather than having to go back to college to retrain themselves after they've been fired from their old job, which has been replaced by technology.
Well, it raises a question of what kinds of memories you would be able to record. I mean, is it sort of information, for instance, where you live? Or can you actually record more personal kinds of memories going back to childhood?
Well, here's an example of recording a vacation that you never had. Let's say that a test subject takes a vacation and has a luxurious walk on this beautiful, shiny beach. You can record that memory, that little snippet of memory of being right in the middle of this tremendous white beach and seeing the ocean. Tape record that memory, record it on tape, and then play it back into someone else's hippocampus, and they too will have a memory of walking on the beach.
But I have to say, some of what you've been describing makes me a little nervous. I mean, the idea, for instance, of uploading memories into someone else's brain, I mean, that they never had, this really is right out of science fiction in a dystopian kind of way, I would think.
Well, it opens up a tremendous avenue of research, also entertainment. Can you imagine one day having a brain net where the internet is replaced by a brain net where we send memories, emotions, and feelings on the internet? Children would love it. Can you imagine Facebook? It would explode with memories of the first date, the first kiss, the first senior prom, things like that. But as you correctly pointed out, technology is a sword. It can be used to cut against ignorance, poverty, and disease, but it can also be used to cut against people. For example, at MIT just last year, they were able to upload the first false memory. False memories have now been uploaded into the brains of mice, and it means that in the future, perhaps the memory of a crime that you never committed could be uploaded into someone. And so this would probably have to be regulated. That is, memories in the future, I imagine, would have to be stated that clearly that this is a false memory. It's a memory of something that never happened. And you would have to have that information uploaded when the memory itself is uploaded.
Well, it also places tremendous power in the hands of the computer programmers. I mean, the people who are actually controlling this technology. Does this alarm you at all, some of these developments?
Well, first of all, we are genetically hardwired to be apprehensive about the future because our ancestors were timid apes. And so it's natural for us when we first hear about the internet, when we first hear about these technologies that are going to revolutionize our world, we're a little bit apprehensive. But then later, hey, we just get used to it.
Michio Kaku is a theoretical physicist at the City University of New York. He talked with Steve Paulson about his book, The Future of the Mind.